Welcome to the Bikerian Podcast. I am Eric.
And I'm Aisla. And this week our topic is ageism. I'm very excited. We have a guest this week.
Our first guest that we have figured out technically how to bring into this conversation.
Janine Vandenberg. And would you be so kind as to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I'm Janine Vandenberg, and right now, after leaving a consulting firm that I started over 3 decades ago, I stepped away to run an initiative in Colorado that is funded by Next 50 Initiative and Rose Community Foundation called Changing the Narrative in Colorado. The narrative that we're trying to change is about aging and ageism. In Colorado and across the United States. And basically what we're trying to do is counter a lot of the negative prejudicial stereotypes about people as they get older, and to encourage people to think about the benefits of the fact that we have this great actually advance in our society. So all of us are living longer and healthier lives. And that should be a good thing. But right now, if you listen to popular media, if you're doing something like reading the paper, typically what you hear are narratives that pit younger people against older people, that have headlines like boomers versus millennials, that have a lot of zero-sum thinking. We're either going to support programs for older people or we're going to fund education for young children. And given that all of us are aging and that we have increased longevity in our country, actually a good thing, it shows all of these advances in medical science, so people are living longer. The public conversation that we should be having is how do we make the most of this? How do we bring that spirit of innovation and thinking about how we do things in new ways? And unfortunately, we're not there. And so the initiative that I'm running is basically designed to get people to talk about this, to share research-based methods of shifting public perception about what it means to get older, to increase awareness that ageism is a thing. So the research was done by this national communications firm called Frameworks Institute, and what they found in surveying and talking to thousands of Americans across the country is basically people don't even think ageism is a thing.
So, right. No, it's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, so what I loved when you did that podcast about millennials is this recognition that ageism goes in multiple directions. So ageism directed against younger people often says things like, well, millennials are entitled and their work ethic isn't that great. And having 2 millennial daughters, I would totally discount that. And then on the other end, it's there are a lot of negative stereotypes about people as they get older, which are equally not true, but absolutely held in public perception.
Yeah. And to your point, it's really interesting. So we've done guns as a subject. We've done
trans rights,
gay topics, a lot of obviously politically motivated things. And we posted up before that first podcast a little question to prompt some people to give us some ideas of, you know, what to cover. And it blew up on the Facebook into the most ugly arguments we've ever seen.
Yeah, ageism, I'm really grateful to you for talking to me before we did that podcast in terms of, you said age is something that affects everybody equally. And I think that's really true. And so people have a lot more personal investment and personal reaction to the topic. So it's one of the things that
I was just shocked. I mean, literally, you know, talking about any other subject had not elicited that much of a reaction from people.
Okay, Eric. So I'm finding this hard to believe. Are you telling me that ageism elicited more controversy than guns?
Yes.
I'm shocked.
No,
not even a little.
I had more civil conversations around guns and sex work than we did around ageism.
We had people call like swearing at each other in the comments of our Facebook.
So I guess that tells me I have a lot of work to do.
You have a lot of work to do.
It also gives me job security for one day.
There's a reason that this subject prompted having one of our first guests, because it's been one of the most controversial things we've talked about. And we're literally talking about the stuff we talk, you know, that's on CNN headlines and that sort of thing.
One of the things...
Can I ask you, I don't know if you can share this on a podcast. What kind of things were people saying?
A lot of words that we can't say on the podcast, just out of respect to people.
It seemed to be mostly...
One thing that struck me was, why don't you date someone your own age?
Yeah.
That was a big one.
That seems odd.
Yeah, one of the people in the list were talking about their compassion for ageism for younger people because their partner was younger. And the response was, why don't you date someone your own age? It was weird, honestly.
I bet.
It was really weird. It's why we did the millennials first, because the rage, I think that what you're talking about in terms of the prejudice against age in terms of older people is actually more widespread and more genuinely damaging in terms of like some of the research that we were talking about before the show started, that what you believe about aging can actually shorten your life. So if you are someone who believes that getting older means you are going to be non-functional and less able to contribute to society, then they said on average, people who have those really negative perceptions of aging tend to live 7.5 years less than people who don't. So there's this older prejudice that isn't genuinely damaging to people in that way. There seems to be a lot more actual rage towards younger people.
Yeah. So, and that's really interesting to me. So I think it in part probably depends on your audience. And so what's interesting to me, and I was really, when you just cited that statistic, so one of the things that we know is ageism has so many negative effects, and you've certainly talked about some of the physical and mental health effects. There was a recent study that showed that people who have experienced ageism actually also, it somehow interferes with their memory kind of as they age. We know that it certainly interferes with financial security. So there are a lot of negative things that apply to the individual. I think one of the things that we don't talk about in a large public conversation, and again, why I'm so grateful that you all are doing this series that you are, is the damage to community when we have these ageist attitudes. So I don't know if any of you saw Denver Post headlines last Sunday, and it's about this incredible talent and workplace shortage that we have in Metro Denver and how it's hampering companies' ability to grow. Nowhere in that conversation is there any mention of there are lots and lots of older adults in Metro Denver, 50 up, who left the workforce either voluntarily or involuntarily for a period of time, who are not able to get back in. We know that research shows if you lose a job after age 50, it takes you much, much longer to get a job again, if you're even able to, than a younger person.
And I didn't realize that. That's actually kind of a shocking statistic.
Well, and it's interesting when you think about it, Eric. So if we have this workplace shortage, and I was at a meeting on Tuesday night, it's called the Colorado Encore Network. It's one of the activities we do at Changing the Narrative. And it's basically a venue for people who are age 50 plus to connect with each other, to network a bit, but also find out about, you know, how can we keep involved in community, in the economy, and that kind of thing. This particular program was about, somebody was doing a program on LinkedIn, and there were in the room at least 30 people, mostly over age 50 plus, not entirely, and there were a few people in their 30s, and I didn't have a chance to talk to them, but I was like, are you in the tech industry? Is this why you're sort of looking for kind of employment again? But it was interesting because everybody was telling stories of, and these are people with amazing qualifications, but who feel like they are totally being rejected out of hand because of their age. And so I look at that on one hand. Here's this whole talent pool of people with marketing and teaching and engineering and technology backgrounds. And here's this Denver Post story with all of these companies that are talking about, we can't fill our workforce. And it seemed to me that if we can figure out a way to sort of bridge that gap, good for companies and also obviously good for older workers. So, yeah. Can you all do that? Maybe invite a group of employers next time to your podcast.
We can certainly look at some options. I can tell you this. One of the other things that I know is very common, and I work in the tech industry. We were talking about this right before we started on the show, and ageism does kind of run rampant in there. But another side of that is one thing I noticed in the tech industry. The massive amount of job shifting that happens in that, it's like, right, especially with millennials, I know that's a stat that is actually, you know, people have proven in various industries, right, they're more likely to move on from a job after 3 years and to kind of just better, yeah, deal their situations. And the tech industry is like just really bad about that in general. Right. And I have to say that, you know, with millennials as the younger generation right now, I'm wondering what's going to happen. Like, are they going to start to hit a ceiling for their age cutoff when they don't want to do that because it got hard the last time? Because, right, they're in their 30s or 40s or something.
Right. You know? So I can't predict that. But it seems to me that if we accept as a society that ageism is okay, that becomes a natural and unfortunate consequence of that, right? To me, the thing that's really interesting, so part of what we're doing in changing the narrative is we're using tested messaging that has been tested across the United States with large sample across socioeconomic status, racial, ethnic, gender, age, political affiliation. What are messages that actually change people's thinking about what it means to get older and ageism? And one of the messages, or there are two messages that I think are sort of relevant to this conversation that really shift things. And one is this idea that we build momentum as we age. So if I were going to ask each of you, do you know something today and understand something today that you didn't know a year ago, what would you tell me?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
So now think of that just kind of built over time, right? We're learning things every year. We have a certain sort of wisdom and strengths that we build up over time. And when companies or anyone exhibits ageist behavior, I guess, what we're doing is we're saying, we're going to just move that wisdom and those strengths over to the sideline. We're not going to pay attention to it. And so think of that valuable kind of social and intellectual capital that's just kind of lost, right? Eric, you know something you didn't know a year ago, but, you know, if all of a sudden somebody decides that you're too old because we're in the tech industry, well, you know, they're losing out on that. They're losing out on that insight that you have because you've seen this sort of pattern before. You know what's going to happen. You might be able to mentor younger people in your workforce, but if that's pushed aside, we lose that. So when that is explained to people about kind of how we all build momentum and that can be used to contribute to community and the economy, that actually, in a positive way, shifts public opinion about getting older and about the contributions that we can all make to society, business, and the economy as we get older. And the other thing that shifts public opinion is to think about innovation and the creativity of American people. So I guess I'm going to ask you, both of you, another question. If you think about what are some of the major, changes or innovations that have occurred in the last decade, what would you say?
Well, you know, and I think, you know, in our first podcast, we were talking about it, like the various different aspects. And we were going into it before we did the research and we were thinking, oh yeah, well, millennials are at this like turning point. It's like the most massive shift we've had in society with the technology, right, taking over. And what we found is it's absolutely not true. Like, it is a massive shift, but the experience we're having with that previous generation is not different, right? Than they had in the 1930s, than they had in the 1800s.
Right.
Like, and so, you know, I think to your point, yeah, there have been massive amounts of innovation, especially in the last 20 years. And it hasn't, you know, that it has not affected in any way positively or negatively. Like what we're seeing in this generational gap right now is the same as it has always been.
Right. And so, and my thinking always is, so I don't know if either of you have seen this pyramid, and I wish, I don't know how to talk about this on a podcast so you can coach me. So there's this really interesting graphic that was released by the Census Bureau this spring, which really talks about, and really what we're talking about is there is a fundamental shift, a fundamental demographic shift that is occurring. It's not just in Colorado. It's not just in the United States. It's across the world. And it's a combination of two factors. And one factor is, you know, advances in healthcare and medical science. So people are living longer. And the other part of the demographic shift is that there's declining birth rate, both in developed and developing countries. So overall, across the world, we have this really shift. And so I'm going to describe this.
Well, and just so you know, we'll post a link to this with the show. So people will be able to see the graphic too.
I will actually send you this graphic because it's so powerful. And when I show it to people, they're like, I had no idea. So one of the things that when Frameworks Institute was doing its research, they were asking people, you know, what do you think are the trends in America? And one of the things they learned is that people actually think that America is getting younger. And exactly the opposite is true. America, like every other country across the world, is getting older. And it's really illustrated in the Census Bureau graphic. So I want you to just picture right now, if you have a piece of paper in front of you, draw it out. On a left-hand side, write 1960 on the top. And then draw basically a pyramid. So wide bottom, tapering up to a kind of a triangle. At the bottom are children 0 to 4. At the top are people 85 plus. You've got this very stark and narrow pyramid that is the graphic. Mm-hmm. On the other side, right-hand side, right at the top, 2060. It is absolutely a column. So basically from 0 to 4 to 85 plus, and you go all the way, there are a few little indentations, but basically you have a column. So there are a lot of people who have used the term like silver tsunami and baby boomers. And once all the baby boomers die off, we're going to be fine and there are going to be no aging people. And the reality is that that is not true because the things that are all leading to increased longevity apply to my generation as a baby boomer. They apply to your generation as Gen Xers. They apply to millennials and Gen Z and whatever that new generation is that is just being born. But basically, the projections are we have a fundamental demographic shift and we're aging. And so I think the challenge for all of us is like, okay, so how do we recognize what's the potential opportunity there? How do we continue to think about how can older people contribute? How do we not force them out of the workforce and therefore make them dependent?
And there's...
We need to do a lot of rearranging. And it's really, it's a social issue. It's a social justice issue. And we kind of haven't figured it out because we're not having public conversations about it. So kudos to the two of you for raising this, even though you're probably going to acquire some more Facebook hate as a result.
Well, hopefully not.
No such thing as bad press, right?
Right, there you go. Well, one of the things that I find to be really interesting, you know, in terms of looking into this is that ageism was actually only coined as a term in 1969 by Dr. Robert Butler.
And I love that you found that right away because I was like on this job. I'm not an expert in age. I like was on the job 3 months before I found Robert Butler. And I'm like, oh my God, they found it right away. So yeah, kudos to you.
Well, thank you. And then looking into some of that and realizing the other thing that I found to be really interesting is that they did a they called it a psycho info search on Google and different forms of discrimination. And they compared sexism, racism, and ageism.
Right.
And in 2012, they did a search on ageism and they found 750 results. In 2017, they did a search. They found 1,382 results, which compares to 11,000 plus for racism and 3,700 plus for sexism. And so that kind of gives you an understanding of where just the research is, where the energy is. And it's not that racism and sexism aren't clearly social issues. It is that ageism as an issue is just barely beginning to be seen for what it is, which is an issue in terms of how we treat people, not a condition that is inevitable.
Right. Well, so I love the way you frame that, and I'm just going to interject a couple of things. So one of the things that Frameworks Institute, when they did all of their research to find out what the general public in America thought about aging and ageism, and so part of the research was, do people even know that ageism is a thing? What was really interesting was basically what they found was people do not recognize that ageism exists. It is basic. It's not even in people's thoughts or conversations. Then at some point in their research, when they were testing messaging, there have been some organizations that have said, well, ageism is the next civil rights issue. And what they found was, and for exactly the reason you just mentioned, people who've experienced racism or sexism think, well, it can't possibly be as bad. And because it is absolutely absent from the minds of most Americans, the sort of the recommended strategy for talking about it is, you know, ageism, so we should, I guess, we should not compare ageism to racism or sexism. And you've already kind of articulated why we shouldn't do that. But we do need to talk about it as it is an injustice, and we need to confront this injustice if we want to live up to our aspirations, not necessarily our reality, but if we want to live up to our aspirations of being a just society.
So, and that was actually the point that I was going to make. I don't foresee any state senators or major figureheads at large corporations being forced to resign in shame for making, you know, in this case, they made racial slurs, you know, and things like that. I don't see that happening to anybody for saying that people over 50 are dumb.
Oh, Eric, you're defying my dream. No,
I mean, realistically, like, there's not the social punitive nature to ageism
Right
now.
Right. Although I will say, here's the punitive nature that I took. So I think it's Seasons 52. There was a huge settlement earlier this year with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission against incredibly, incredibly ageist things. And so they settled for $2.8 million. And so my punitive thing was, I am no longer going there and getting my gluten-free lobster flatbread.
Well, there you go.
I know.
Well, and one of the things that...
You said it was okay to tell personal stories,
right? Please, no, it definitely. And that actually, one of the things that Eric and I were talking about is, you know, our moms are about the same age in their early 70s. We'll be nonspecific.
Yes.
To be respectful. And that, you know, my mom is in full-time supervised care. She she has dementia. She needs to have her medication managed. And his mom is...
My mom is still working full-time. Recently started dating somebody. Is constantly filling her weekends with fishing trips and going out and doing stuff. It's a totally different experience. And, you know, if you put them next to each other, I think people would be able to understand that, yes, somebody in their 70s can be one way and then they can be another.
It's not inevitable. And that's not to say that, you know, I definitely...
I mean, I hope I'm like my mom when I'm in my 70s, right? Like, don't we all?
No. And my body doesn't bounce back the way that it once did. If I injure myself, I need to be a little more thoughtful. Like, there are some biological realities. However, the inevitability of not being functional, I don't think that's actually real.
Right.
And yet it is what you're talking about. It's the narrative that we live in. We live in this narrative of age does this to you. And the, and they were saying in one of these studies that if you are a younger person who has that belief, you have already shortened your life.
Exactly.
So, so it's
which
not-
ought to be reason enough for us to reject ageist attitudes, right?
Right. And I think if people know that, it might help.
Yeah. Well, okay. But you're really helping here with changing the narrative. So a couple of things I want to share with you that are kind of related to this. So there's this amazing author, Ashton Applewhite, and she's actually going to be in Colorado in mid-August. Who wrote, I think it's called This Chair Rocks, an aging or a manifesto against ageism. And so one of the stats that she has in her book, and, you know, so I think we all fear about aging that, you know, we're going to end up, we're going to be in a nursing home, we're going to be institutionalized. And she points out the statistics that actually for older people, only 4% end up in that condition. Okay, so that's one. And I think there's a public perception of that's the inevitable thing when you age, right? So
right. Well, that my mom, and what I found also to interject is that I was looking up dementia and dementia statistics. And while we talk about that as being an increasing concern, the percentage of people who are coming down with dementia is actually decreased. We just happen to have a larger population of people who are at risk for it at this time. So once again, you know, you have enough people and they're learning more about what you can do to prevent it, what you can do to take care of your brain so that you, and a lot of that is a little bit what you're talking about, the more physically and mentally active you stay for as long as possible, the more physically and mentally capable you will be. So as long as we can really embrace that option for people, they are going to have fuller, better lives.
Right. And I want to add something to that. So one of the things that DreamWorks found in its research, and I think this is like really important, it was sort of this idea that if you were experiencing aging and negative outcomes in aging, it was somehow your fault. That you didn't walk enough, that you didn't eat the right foods, you didn't save enough money. And one of the things we've kind of ignored is how context makes a difference. And so, and I was talking with a friend of mine who was like, well, my mom, she's 85 and she walks every day and she does all of this great stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, that's great. And the implication was, of it was, well, if everybody just walked enough, they would be fine. And then we were talking further and we kind of found out, well, by the way, you know, his mom lived by a walking trail that had been built by the community that she lived in so that people of all ages would have kind of more exercise. So, and be able to, you know, kind of improve their quality of life. So it's sort of a, we need to think about the social context of all of this and the community context and not somehow, you know, if someone is experiencing negative outcomes in older age, say somehow, you know, it was their fault. And one of the things that I hate about most of the traditional media are all these stories that, you know, this poor woman is now on the sidewalk with her belongings and she didn't save enough money. And I'm like, can we just talk about what affordable housing is like in Metro Denver? And, you know, so those are the kind of conversations we need to have as opposed to, well, you know, it's kind of up to the individual. So
I think that's really important to recognize our community responsibility. It's one of the things that Eric actually brought up on a show we did about suicide and how a lot of times, especially liberals, will get really excited about what's happening with, you know, the bats in some other country. Not that the bats aren't important. However, what's going on in your community?
What's your neighbor up to?
Okay. I would have a whole other conversation about with you about this. I'll probably do it offline because I have to have a rant about this, but thank you.
But yeah. I think ageism is the same kind of thing. And I think my personal opinion, and of course this is your line of work, so dispute me if you feel I'm wrong, but I think it's more of a community awareness thing. You know, racism can get insidious and it's a community awareness thing. And you know what? Sometimes there needs to be laws like hate crime laws and things like that. And that's a sad reality of that world. But I'm hopeful that, you know, changing the narrative literally and in reference to the organization, you know, can actually get people to think and act in a little bit different of a way, not right. in that old, you know, respect your elders sort of way, but in a, you know, look, we're all going to experience this. Maybe right. a little bit of empathy would go a long way.
Well, and right. speaking to the legal thing, so when looking through this, other countries actually have instituted laws. So China right. has a law that elderly parents can sue grown children for emotional and financial support, and companies are required to give workers time off to see their parents. Scotland, yeah. Scotland has pledged to hear the elderly, and the cultural thinking and money has shifted away from hospitals towards mm-hmm. preventative care.
I love that. Underscore that. We need to shout out that story.
Yeah, preventative care. And then the French passed a law that requires adult children to keep in touch with their elderly parents. The law was passed in response to a study that showed a high rate of elderly suicides in France. Yeah. And so other countries have actually taken to passing laws in order to create an obligation right. for someone to pay attention to the elderly, presumably right. someone who would care.
Right. So, and I want to kind of add to that a bit, because I've been, since I kind of, you know, jumped into all of this as my encore career, but trying to study, as you have, what other countries have been doing. And what occurs to me is that people, so we always pride ourselves in the U.S. on we've got American innovation and stuff. And I feel like other countries are really doing a lot more innovative stuff. So, for example, there was regardless of what you feel about cars and whatever, Mercedes-Benz. So in Germany, the Mercedes-Benz factory did something really interesting, and they're dealing with the aging of their workforce, and they basically got all the workers together and said, so how do we keep the older workers on to mentor younger workers and everybody can work together, and got suggestions that are, you know, fairly, I mean, they seem so simple to almost be not worth mentioning, but maybe we could sit on high stools instead of having to stand all day. Maybe, you know, things could be in larger print. Maybe we could. So there was a whole series of things that was done, which allowed them to retain their older workers, and also who then become mentor to this kind of new generation who don't have that history of doing it. There's also some really good research that shows that multi-generational workforces are actually more productive and more profitable. So it's somehow we need to get that message out as well to encourage workplaces in this country to kind of think about.
Yeah, completely. I think that's
like,
brilliant.
How do we make this work, right?
Yeah. Well, and I was listening to a Hidden Brain podcast, and I can't recall which one. I'll have to track it down. And one of the gentleman on there was talking about older people, like grandparents. Mm-hmm. That for a long time, they were sort of your big data, right? Like yeah. Now we have the internet and such. And the reason, or one of the motivations for the elders having that place of respect, is that they had the most experiences. And, right. and I just loved when he equated that to big data. I was like, right. great. Like,
that is an interesting, isn't it? Right.
It was the original form of that. And that, because yeah. they, not everyone, obviously, but their experiences allowed them to approach their grandchild wanting to do something that was considered to be, because you see it in lots of, you know, even Disney stories, the grandparents right. are often the more understanding. And it's because right. they're big data. Right. They've got the longer view. Right. And so but we lost that connection somehow in our, in our culture.
And so the really interesting thing to me, and this is something else that the Frameworks Institute found, and I love this. So you're exactly right. We have lost that. And yet there's this kind of emerging trend. There's an organization called Generation to Generation. There is something else called Generations United. It is basically the idea, how do we, and I don't want to call it replace that grandparent experience, but how do we replicate it in some way? And one of the most effective things, and there's a lot of research about it, is intergenerational programs, multi-generational programs, where maybe it isn't grandparent to grandchild, because now grandparents and grandchildren may be in different cities and different communities, but it is with older people and children in a particular community, You know, maybe older people are tutoring children after school. Maybe there's a program that is actually now kind of launching in Denver where older entrepreneurs who have run successful companies are mentoring kind of young people who want to do startups. I mean, there are a lot of examples of that. And we need to not only encourage that, but we also know when people are involved in those kind of things, and it's very much related to the research that you had all done, that decreases ageism. Because if you're working with someone and they're helping you out, you're kind of like, oh, okay, being older isn't that bad. I wanted just for a moment, I feel like there's so many like we could do a whole day. That's not a
problem. We really could.
But no, so those are the really positive things, right? And it's kind of in a way replicating or substituting for that grandparent experience. On the other side, some of the horrific things. So there's this thing that I discovered called 100 Days of School. Have you heard about this?
No.
No.
Okay. So 100 Days of School, and I learned this was a thing by somebody who was in one of my workshops. So 100 Days of School is encouraging very young children, basically kindergartners, to dress up as old people. Now, one of the things we know about racism, sexism, and ageism, and I think you have it in your research.
This sounds like it's going to come out in like blackface or something.
Oh my goodness. No. Yeah. Okay. Very, very. No. I'm going to read you a few things from the website. But it's sort of, so in the research you shared with me, you talked about how people form these negative stereotypes in these early ages, like ages 4 to 6. So here's the, so I found this blog because I was like, I don't believe this is a thing. Ideas for kids to dress up like old people. During elementary school, kids are often to encourage dress up as 100-year-olds for the 100 day of school. Other times they may just want to be senior citizens for Halloween. So here are some of the tips. Long skirts and blouses are great for women, but a matching sweatsuit would work for women as well as men. Make sure you do something to make them bulkier. Accessories can really make a costume. Grab a walker or a cane. If your child is older or bigger, consider using a wheelchair. When your child is all dressed up, she needs to practice her elderly persona. She might want to try talking at a slower speed. Try a few phrases she may have heard, such as calling other people Sonny. And final sentence in the blog, encourage your child to go a little overboard as a stereotypical old person to make it more fun. Do you think the children, that ages, right? This is a thing, evidently, across the United States. I had no idea.
I had never heard of this.
I've never did that in my school days that I can remember.
I am so glad. I will send you a link to this blog. So if you're curious, I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
But, you know, and again, blackface, I mean, we talked about on a show, and we recently went and saw a Shakespearean play with the Colorado Shakespeare Festival. And long story short, they had women actors there. That wasn't always normal, right? Like when those came out, those roles all had to be played by men.
There was
a time when blackface was not taboo. So, you know, in some ways, it's the same sort of thing. Like it takes time. It takes people saying, I feel weird about that. We need to have a discussion about why.
No, and I actually shared this blog with a group of people in one of my workshops, and they were horrified. They had no idea. And they were even like, okay, we need to form campaigns to go down to school board meetings and tell school districts they can't do this. I'm like, great, you go, you know. But I mean, how bizarre, right? Yeah. Anyway, so there's so much. And I want to share this stat with you. So there's something called the implicit bias test. You can get it on the Harvard University website. I will also send you a link to this. But I was about, you know, to lead this initiative. So I was like, I need to figure out if I'm biased against old people, because that would kind of be a bad thing. So I took this implicit bias test. You can take it online. It's really quick. And, you know, I don't like anybody. I'm equally biased against older people and younger people. So I suppose that's a good thing. But what was shocking to me was after I took the test, they sent kind of my results, which was like, I have 0% preference, actually. It's not I hate everybody, but I have 0% preference for older people versus younger people. Great. I was like, phew. But they sent me this sort of, there are close to a million people who have taken this implicit association test. 77% of them have a bias for younger people as against older people. So there's like some really good science. And I know you showed that in some of the stats and the research that you did as well. Ageism is real. And so that's why we've got to, like, you know, elevate this to a conversation like the two of you are doing tonight, and encourage other people to talk about it and say, and I loved how in the Millennial Podcast, Estella, that you mentioned, you know, my favorite saying, what each one of us on this planet has in common is today is the oldest that we have ever been and the youngest we will ever be, right? Yeah. We are all headed in that direction. So,
yeah, it's also unique because I think there's, you know, I will never have the experience of being Black. That's a fact. But age is the one thing that is in common with everyone in some ways. I think that's why.
If you are lucky, Eric, you will have the experience of being an older person.
Right. If you're lucky. Right. if everything works out, I hope I make it to 80, 90, whatever. Right. But, you know, it's kind of an interesting social thing because it's the one condition, you know, men may never know what it's like to be a woman. Women may never know what it's like to be a man, Black, Asian, you know, you name it, all of the isms, right? But this is the one we all do have in common.
We are all headed there. Right.
Thank you so much, Janine. I really appreciate you giving us your time tonight.
Yeah, it was fantastic conversation. Fun.
You all make this painless. I'm like, okay, I would do this again.
Yay.
Given that this topic is so broad, perhaps we will bring you back in the future here and continue the conversation and maybe find some new things and other initiatives to talk about.
Thank you so much for the two of you for really kind of shining a light on social issues. It's very cool.
Well, thank you for the work you're doing as well.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Thanks. Take care.
So time this week for a short Bicurian moment.
Very short.
We had great fun with our guests this week and definitely a format we're going to be going forward with. It actually got me thinking about my Bicurian moment was fully realizing the power that we have with the ability to record and release. And I did cover it in the Hope podcast, you know, talking about how we live in a world where the internet does open the door for that sort of thing. But this is even different because this is how that door is being used. Being able to have that kind of conversation with people and us being able to talk and then interact with the people that listen to this podcast. It's really powerful and it's so nice to have ways to have conversations that don't just have to happen either in the, you know, message boards or Facebook comments, but can actually get out in different ways and people can experience them because people can react to what we say. And then we can even have guests that are experts in the fields we're talking about.
Yeah, I really I've enjoyed that. Mine is, it's a lighthearted one. I went and saw Ant-Man and the Wasp last week. And I was just really struck by, once again, some of these sci-fi action movies and the ways that they are changing the narrative. And my favorite character in Ant-Man and then Ant-Man and the Wasp is Luis, the Chicano ex-con.
He's pretty great.
And just the ways in which, you know, he is really excited about his wine tastings. And it just really flips the assumptions and stereotypes on end.
My favorite thing about both of those movies is that is a core of comedic actors and comedians that have been kind of working together for a while. In various different places. Even the extras in there are all comedians. Some of those characters, you might see them on various different shows or doing stand-up, even on specials and stuff. I really like that dynamic. Get a group of people that's familiar and kind of let them do what they do best.
Yeah, well, and there just seems to be, like, there's so many things. The fact that the Wasp, who is played by a female-bodied person, is the one who does the aggressive driving and chase scene and doesn't, she doesn't give the wheel over to some guy to do it, which I know sounds a little shallow or whatever. It was so cool. The bad guy wasn't really a bad guy.
Do you know what I like most about that?
What?
I didn't notice that, and that's how it should be.
Right.
Having a strong female character, that was great.
Yeah.
I didn't notice because they didn't force it or.
No, it was all really seamless. And the blended family aspect that they started in the Ant-Man, where the main character is divorced and they actually have a functional relationship with their ex and their ex's new spouse. And they all are committed to giving their child the best possible life they can and working through their issues and disagreements. Like all of these little things that, you know, are often presented in not particularly positive ways or diminished. They're just, as you said, they're seamlessly woven into the story.
I think that's the key to normalizing things like that, is to just tell that story, have people see it and not necessarily have it, you know.
It's not the point.
Exactly. It's not the story. It's just how they do things.
And they didn't go for the easy laugh or the predictable trope. Right. They went for something that actually portrays a different way of being that I'm kind of interested in. And then also Luis is hilarious. So there you go.
It was fantastic. If our listeners haven't seen it, check it out.
Thanks for listening. If you have ideas, feedback, thoughts, please find us on social media by Kyrian on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or give us a call at 720-507-7309 or email podcast@bykyrian.com.
Thanks for listening.